Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
This episode of Can We Please Talk Podcast is presented by our friends over at SeatGeek. Do not hit skip right now because your next best night ever is waiting, and SeatGeek has the tickets, shows, music events, sporting events, whatever you want to go to. Go to SeatGeek.com right now. SeatGeek.com right now. Enter in the promo code Can We Please Talk to get $20 off that purchase. Head to SeatGeek.com today. Hey, everybody. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Can We Please Talk podcast. As always, I'm Mike Leon.
And smart enough to know not to run up on Cam Newton, I'm Nick Saveri.
Oof, I wish we had time to get into that segment. More on that in a future episode. If you have not seen this video of the 6'5 former NFL quarterback throwing around a bunch of high schoolers, I highly recommend. Speaking of getting thrown around, on the program today, Nikki Haley's getting thrown around. Her campaign's probably going to end up nowhere. Michigan primary tonight. She just lost in South Carolina. She lost to none of these candidates in Nevada. Nick and I are going to break it all down. What it means for Nikki Haley's campaign going forward, as a major donor organization has already backed out. Plus, later on in the program, Atlanta Journal Constitution reporter Tamar Hollerman joins the program. She's also the co-host of Breakdown. It's a fantastic podcast. If you live in the Atlanta area, or if you want to find out more about Atlanta politics, go follow that podcast. She's going to help us break down this motion against DA Fannie Willis that happened out there in Georgia. In the case against former President Donald Trump, you know, one of the motions that was brought by one of the co-defendants, inappropriate relationship she's having with the prosecutor, special prosecutor that she appointed, Nathan Wade. If you want to learn more about it, you haven't heard of it, you're like, I don't know anything, wait till Tamar comes on the next segment, because she does a fantastic job breaking all of that down. All right, now I say hello to my co-host there, Mr. Saveri. Nick, how are you doing, my friend? What's going on your way? Give me some updates here. SeatGeek's now a sponsor on the show. I'm excited for that. You heard the read in the beginning. Go get your tickets. Enter in that promo code. I can't wait to use that. What's going on your way, my friend?
I mean, the funny thing is I've already used SeatGeek. So, like, they got to back pay me now.
That's right.
No, but not to mention, I'm not going to name the name of the sponsor, but, you know, just off the air, you and I were talking about, we get another perk from one of our other sponsors. That's really cool that I want to take advantage of. So things are good, man. Obviously, on the education on the Educate show, Educate US, of course, that you can all find over at Leon Media Network. You know, we had our first education reporter on the show. I'm super proud of that. An incredible reporter over at Chalkbeat, Jesse Gomez, who, you know, comes on to talk to us about just really what's going on in, you know, one of the larger school districts, public school districts in the country, in Newark. But, you know, that all aside, we're good. You know, it's funny, Mike, I know you've been traveling recently with the family. Where you were is where I'm about to be this coming weekend. So, right. You know, one day we'll cross paths obviously out there, but not to mention Thursday, there's a decent chance you and I are going to run into each other. So this past weekend change is about like crossing paths either in person or you know, sharing the same space, you know, after one of us leaves. So
this, for people that don't know what the hell you're talking about, I just went to the most magical place on earth with the kids. Nick's going the following week, but during the midweek, you and I are actually going to be going to a debate. I do want to tease the debate out here because RFK Jr., Cornel West, Jill Stein, some other candidates that are running for office. You may have not heard of them. They're across multiple parties, and it's a company called Free and Equal. And you can go to freeandequal.org to find out more about where it's being live streamed. It's going to be on a couple different channels. They're going to be doing some stuff on the social media app Rumble. It's going to be moderated. The moderator has not been announced yet, but there's more on that soon. So head over to freeandequal.org. And I've been doing some work with them recently, and I, you know, love their mission. I love, you know, obviously Free and Equal, right? Nick and I will be going for free to see these debates. But I also think, you know, a lot of people don't know about some of these other candidates that are out there, and that's the purpose of this company. So I definitely good job by you shining that out. We'll be at the debate. We'll be posting some stuff, by the way. Follow us on Instagram, Can We Please Talk Podcast, Twitter, Can We Please Talk, TikTok, Can We Please Talk Podcast. We're going to be posting some stuff from the debate that night. Speaking of two people that haven't debated, let's get into our first segment here, Nick, because there is no debate. There's none. GOP primary voters have spoken, and they spoke so loudly that you couldn't even make it to 7:01 p.m., Nick. Take a listen to this.
All right. Polling places are about to close in South Carolina. 5 seconds left in the GOP presidential primary fight between Donald Trump and Nikki Haley. And right now, we can make a major projection. CNN projects that Donald Trump will win the South Carolina Republican primary, defeating former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley in her home state and securing his fourth major early victory.
Nick, it wasn't even 7:01 yet on the clock, and he already had won 59.8 percentage points to 39.5 percentage points of Nikki Haley. He gained 47 delegates on the night. Nikki Haley only gained 3 delegates on the night. Remember, magic number, 1,215. He's slowly marching there. As you're listening to this, if it's Tuesday, your way, if you're listening to it later on the week, this is going to expire what I'm about to say, but the Michigan primary is about to start this week, and polls already have Trump handily in the lead there. And obviously, it's also a primary day for the Democrats as well. But we know, obviously, Joe Biden will be winning that one handily, just like he won already in New Hampshire and how he won already in South Carolina. There was recent polling that shows in Michigan that Donald Trump has such a commanding lead over Nikki Haley in that primary. I mean, I don't know what is next for the former South Carolina governor and UN ambassador. You and I are going to get into some of her messaging in a second. As a matter of fact, let's just dive into it, because I said this the other day, as I was asked this on Scripps News. I was part of their election coverage. And of course, as you just heard, the election coverage was at 7:01. So how much could I have really offered? But I got asked about Nikki Haley, because she said later that night about she's staying in the race. Americans have spoken, saying that they don't want this rematch, overwhelmingly 60%. She's right about that. Nick, I want you to kind of react to what your co-host here said on television about Nikki Haley. Take a listen to this.
If the money's with Nikki Haley, she stays in. Her campaign manager already saying today that they plan to pour, like 7 figures into some of these states, Super Tuesday states, to try to get the turnout. I mean, do you think that it's possible when it's not just one state that we're watching and kind of a bigger collection?
Well, and I agree with that. At a realistic, ideal world level, I 100% agree with that, right? Only 3 states have voted so far. One is a caucus. You know, one was kind of an open primary with New Hampshire. The problem has been for Nikki Haley has been the goalpost messaging moving. Let me explain what I mean by that. At first, in August 27th of last year, when she did the first debate, there was polling that showed that she moved up based on some of the answers, because she was giving general election answers where, you know, independents, and she kept talking about a new coalition of Republican voters that we can bring into the party, right? And so polling started to show that she was rising up, and she's always made the bones of like, there was 12 fellas left and I'm the only one more to go, right? But now, over the last 2 months, as actual voters have gone to the ballot box, we've started to see her message shift, almost like a Bill Belichick tone, where we're on to New Hampshire, she loses there. We're on to South Carolina, she loses there before it's even 7:01. You know, so like, I just don't know realistically the conversation she's having behind closed doors with her donors to say, look, these are the actual states that boots to the ground right now. We feel like we could beat Trump in.
So why are we covering this, Nick? Like, why are we watching this? I know this is not your side of the aisle, as you cannot participate in any of this in your state. But like, why are we covering this if the networks are not even going to make it to 7:00 and they announce a projection as people just left the polling place? This is a joke. This is like laughable. We're not trying to be mean to Nikki Haley. This is a math problem. She doesn't have math on her side. This is not a, we don't like Nikki Haley, we don't like Donald Trump. You already know where we feel about that. If you listen to the show, welcome. This is a math problem. The primary voters are putting on their boots, negative 27 degree weather, and they're going out and they're voting for the former president. In New Hampshire, college educated folks, didn't matter. Undeclared voters, didn't matter. He won by 12 points. Now we go to her home state, where every official, elected official in the state that represents them in D.C., except for Representative Ralph Norman, is backing Donald Trump, including the governor. Every single person. She loses by 21 percentage points. Like, this is not, we're not trying to be mean to Nikki Haley. Like, enough's enough. And earlier this week, the Koch brothers, their political action group, decided to pull funding from Nikki Haley. And I want to read to you what they said, Nick, because they said, we're still backing Nikki Haley. We're just not giving her any money. I mean, I'm sorry. We're still backing her. That's how, like, a girl, go get them, but you're not getting a paycheck from us. What do you make of it all? Is this, Mike, you're being too, reductive, rudimentary about this. Come on, man. Don't be mean to her. Maybe she has a chance. There's a couple states there on Super Tuesday. Or is it like, Mike, I agree with you. What are we doing?
No, I mean, first off, let's all be clear. I mean, Mike, you've been part of the coverage. You know, I know we talk about that a little bit on the show, but like, I'm being dead serious. Like, you're, you know, on location, like in either in New York and different, you know, venues, you know, in real time reacting to this. So you're seeing this. My hope for you, by the way, is that you get to do this in a future election where we're not just seeing, you know, just these quick beatdowns. I'm reminded of watching the later stages of a game of Risk, for anyone who's old enough to have played this game, where one army has amassed so many troops that by the time we're starting to throw dice, it doesn't matter at this point. And that's basically where we are now. This is not so much about being mean to Nikki Haley, who, by the way, someone on her campaign decided to text me today, one of these robo texts, asking for me to donate or to rate, you know, did something. And I simply wrote back, you mean you want me to support the person who just supported the Alabama decision about embryos? Get the bleep off my messages. Get the bleep off my messages, what I wrote back. You know, the math ain't mathin' for her. You've said it, and I'll just quote, you know, what you've said before. And, you know, what's funny is that South Carolina, so a couple of episodes back, we talked about, like, what is a fair margin for her to draw hope from? Like, you lose by a few points, fine. Like, maybe you're still in the race. She got waxed by 20. I think you'd mentioned, like, roughly about 20 points this time in her home state. Folks, there's a, you know, when we think of, like, the GIF Hall of Fame, right? Like, what are the GIFs that you drop in a text message that everyone knows? The one of my most popular ones, the ones I love, is the one of our man Duke from Rocky IV. When he's yelling, throw the damn towel, just before Apollo Creed gets killed in the ring. Shout out to Carl Weathers, rest in peace, by Ivan Drago. That's not a bad accent. That's the gif I would be texting the Haley campaign. Throw the damn towel. Shout out to the Koch brothers. I'm not a fan of theirs, although they have a third brother who seems a little more level-headed. I get it. I've asked this question about supporters financially of DeSantis and other candidates that you put in money toward these people, and these people just perpetually keep losing. What is the point of the investment then? So to say for them that, you know, they support her, but they don't really support her,
there's a joke I could probably, or connection I can make to Citizens United here, that, you know, landmarks Supreme Court case, but I'm not going to. This is not shocking to me. It's laughable at this point. I don't remember a time where we've seen such an ass kicking, basically, at every single one of these primaries. You know, and for the Trump campaign, the one thing I will wonder about, and maybe you have an answer to this, or if not, we have to go look this up, are we're seeing the same number of voters that are appearing in these primaries? Or is it that just simply those who do show up are such ardent Trump supporters that, you know, these candidates are getting just blown out? Because that's what I'm wondering, is the turnout in a primary, which often is not the same as a general election, but are these primaries showing the same number of voters? Because if not, then what we're seeing is, this is one of those things where it's like, let's say you have less people going to a concert or to like whatever thing they're into, but those who come are the diehards. That's great in a primary. It's great for the Trump people. But right. You have to wonder, though, is come November, you know, what are the moderates going to do? Are, you know, we've had, I forgot the person's name, but oh, you know what? In opposition to CPAC, I heard this on MSNBC. Someone came on, or maybe it was NPR, I forget. And the person represented another organization that just at the same time as CPAC, which of course is the Conservative Political Action Committee, which, you know, you go look up the craziness that they allow at their events these days. There was an opposing event in DC, I believe. And it was just Republicans, conservatives, that saw that they needed to have their own, a different voice, you know, the never Trumps, essentially. And the person who was interviewed, you know, proudly said, you know, if Trump is the nominee, that he himself would not vote for Trump. He, in fact, would vote for Joe Biden. And that's what I'm wondering about, is that, you know, regardless of the primary results, because we know at this point, Trump's not just the front runner, he's the nominee. Like, if Haley were smart, just pull out and figure out, you know, another strategy and, you know, maybe surprise us all and get behind the former president or the current president. I don't know. But like, there's no plan here. And as far as, is this really impressive about Trump? I think it's more about like the depth of those who truly support him than it really is a statement of the party. I think there's a smaller game that we're talking about here that gets a lot of attention. But lastly, I'll say this, in terms of media attention, Mike, you were sort of giving off the sense of, you know, Are we making too big a deal of this, or, you know, is the hype train like wherever it is? And what I would say is South Carolina, which was a big primary. I mean, it's a big primary early on, and it's Nikki Haley's home state. The outsider looking in, it felt like such a foregone conclusion that it didn't even seem like it got a lot of attention.
Yeah.
It just seemed like the feeling was, oh, we know he's going to win. And he did. Even the magnitude of it's 20 points, you like, this should be a bigger story. Like, how catastrophic is this for the Haley campaign? It's not. It's not talked about enough, which makes me think that either the media has in general said that this is, you know, a foregone conclusion that Trump's the nominee, or is it a bigger conversation of, we're not really going to talk about this until we get to the summer. Like, are we going to start to have this simmer down and focus more on, you know, the upcoming cases against the former president? Because the primary process is essentially over for both parties.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been over since she lost to none of these candidates in Nevada. And again, she was, if you don't know about what happened in Nevada, there was a caucus and a primary. Trump won the caucus overwhelmingly against Ryan Binkley, who was on this show once upon a time, blew him out of the water. Nikki Haley was not a part of the caucus. She decided to opt for the primary. And she lost to a write-in candidate that said none of these candidates. It was like, who do you want? A, B, or C? And she lost to C, and she lost by like 25 percentage points. So it was not good. Let me give you some last stats before we go to the break here. Because first off, Nikki Haley, if you're listening to this, if one of her surrogates listen to this, you know who you have to blame for Donald Trump beating you in South Carolina? You. You know why? Because in 2015 and 2016, you, Lindsey Graham, Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, you all warned about dangers of Donald Trump becoming president. Then he becomes president. He overwhelms the party. And I've made this analogy like a tidal wave. And now you're under it and the water's all over you. Nothing you can do now. You might as well drown. And you're drowning. And guess what? You found out the hard way by drowning on Saturday. So you have nobody to blame but yourself. So I wanted to give that. The second thing is, Nick, Michigan is an open primary state. They thought maybe she'd have a chance in some of these open primary states. On March 5th, open primary, Super Tuesday, Alabama, Alaska, Arkansas, California, Colorado, Maine, Massachusetts, Minnesota, North Carolina, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, Vermont, Virginia, and the American Samoa is all going to participate in this. Of those states, Alabama, Colorado, Arkansas, Maine, Virginia, Texas, Tennessee, partially, are open primary states, meaning that you don't have to, you know, register. You have to register to vote. You don't have to register for that political party to be able to participate in the process. Similar to what happened in New Hampshire, where undeclared voters could participate. Sometimes if you're registered, let's say I was registered a Democrat in New Hampshire, and I wanted to register to vote in the Republican primary because Joe Biden is an incumbent and there is nobody challenging him. Shout out to Dean Phillips. You would have to have switched by a certain date. Some states have that, so you'd be able to switch that. The other thing I found interesting was the early voting in South Carolina was from February 12th to the 22nd. And the reason why they made the projection call so early is because of that early voting. People were early voting so much for Trump that when he gave that victory speech, he was saying, I'm going to win by the biggest margin ever, is because he was getting a lot of that data back that was saying from at least the networks, as the early precincts were showing, the majority of those votes, I should say, went to him. All right, we leave it there because there really isn't much else to this. Nikki Haley, clock is ticking. Now, look, political analyst and me, I'd like to be on TV a little bit more, so I would love for you to make it to Super Tuesday, but math's not mathing, and maybe the money may dry up soon. So we'll keep focused on that over the next couple of weeks. One thing I did want to focus on is coming up in the next segment as we welcome in Tamar Hallerman over at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. You want to find out more about everything that's happening in one of those legal cases that Nick mentioned in Georgia of the former president. Tamar is going to break down the latest around that case, where we are as of today, and the motion against Fannie Willis and this relationship that she had with the special prosecutor, Nathan Wade. Tamar, when we come back after the break.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Nick, today's episode is presented, as always, by our friends over at Fresh Roasted Coffee. Since 2009, their passion has always been bringing you gourmet coffees from all over the world, roasted fresh to order. I got my coffee snob here, Nick Saveri. Nick, tell these people, coffee snob it up here, tell these people why Fresh Roasted Coffee is so good and why they're the official sponsor of Can We Please Talk?
You know, often the best cup of coffee that you're ever going to have is the one you can make from home. And you need good quality coffee to do that. And that's what Fresh Roasted Coffee offers. You know, between single origin, between blends, flavors, anything on the coffee spectrum they've got. But more importantly, and I can't stress this enough, often when you purchase coffee, you don't know where to start. I mean, there's so many different varieties, so many different opportunities, so many different things you could choose from. And Fresh Roasted Coffee just gives you a very simple questionnaire and just says, hey, figure out what your coffee cup is. Figure out what blend works for you. I've gotten some single origin recommendations, so has Mike, and that's influenced everything. And what they recommend, you can get in a Keurig cup, the way Mike takes it. You can take it in the way I do it, which is typically through a French press, or you can get it for a percolator. Whatever coffee machine you've got, they've got you covered. But more importantly, just a huge variety and a way to learn more about coffee itself.
And all of this is available at freshroastedcoffee.com on their site. One cup is all it takes to fall in love with Fresh Roasted Coffee, but you get a discount for being a listener of Can We Please Talk. Enter in the promo code Can We Please Get 20 to get 20% off your first purchase. Head to freshroastedcoffee.com today. This episode is presented by the good folks over at Nerd Focus, new energy drink sponsor on the show. Nick, let me ask you a quick question. Do you lack focus and concentration, motivation? Do you need something to boost your stamina and strength?
I do. You know, coffee isn't enough. So I'm always looking for other options.
Well, I got something for you, Nick, that's going to boost your stamina and strength. It's going to enhance your focus and concentration. We're going to ramp up your motivation. We're going to provide alertness and stimulation. We're going to even improve your mood, Nick, which a lot of people on the comments are going to be happy with. I got the original Think Drink infused with powerful nootropics, performance boosting nutrients. Click the link in our show notes right now to get a special offer on Nerd Focus beverages for being a Can We Please Talk listener. Nerd Focus, there's a nerd in everyone. All right, kind enough to give us a couple minutes here to break down everything that's been happening in Georgia with the motion against Fannie Willis, all the latest on the RICO stuff with the former president and Donald Trump. Tamar Hellerman's joining us here from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. She's also the co-host of Breakdown, fantastic podcast. You can go listen to it wherever you get your pods. Tamar, Mike, thank you so much for hopping on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
You know, I've been following you a lot. You and I were talking about this off air. I've been following you truly. I think I reached out to you when the first indictments actually broke out, and you were like, "Hey, I'm a little busy right now, so let's table this discussion for later on." And I couldn't blame you at that point. But since then, maybe the audience, our audience from a national perspective, has not been following what's been happening in Georgia. We've seen a little bit of this motion that was filed by one of the defendant's attorneys against Fannie Willis for this inappropriate relationship that she was having with the special prosecutor, which she appointed to help her in this case. Summation that I just gave aside, can you kind of take our audience overview, 30,000 foot overview of what the motion was about and kind of what's the latest in this motion and when we expect an actual decision from the judge on it?
So this motion from defendant Mike Roman, who really was one of the lowest profile defendants in this case, he was a former Trump campaign official, worked in the White House under Donald Trump. And it really has brought the rest of this case pretty much to a standstill. We were moving along with pretrial motions. We were starting to talk about when a potential trial could begin. The DA's office wanted that to begin in August. But right now, all of that, everyone's just kind of waiting for Judge Scott McAfee to rule on this motion from Mike Roman. Now, he's alleging that this relationship, which in and of itself is not necessarily enough to get a prosecutor disqualified, but the meat of this allegation is that DA Fannie Willis improperly benefited financially from this Trump case because of her relationship with Nathan Wade, the special prosecutor who's overseeing this case. Michael Roman points to trips that Nathan Wade took the DA on to places like Napa Valley, the Caribbean, cruises they've been on. And he says that is enough to show that the DA has been enriching herself off the case. And he's arguing that because of that, the entire DA's office should be pulled from this case, should be removed and disqualified. Not only that, he's asking for Judge Scott McAfee to have the charges against him dismissed, which seems like a much less likely thing to occur. And so we've been duking this out for the last 6 weeks or so. It took the DA's office more than 3 weeks to respond to all of this. They acknowledged that they had been in a relationship, Fannie Willis and Nathan Wade, but they have denied that they did anything wrong. They said that they paid for travel expenses roughly equally and accused Mike Roman's attorney of lying about them and basically picking around in their personal lives to make this a political circus and not necessarily something that had legal standing. There was a pretty extraordinary evidentiary hearing here last week, which I know a lot of news networks carried live, where DA Fannie Willis took the stand pretty unexpectedly. And we're waiting to hear from next steps from the judge.
Yeah, that was some testimony for people that did not see this. You know, she was watching it in her office. She decided to go down to the courthouse and testify, according to her and what she said. There's so many different directions and follow-ups from kind of what you said. I want to get into the relationship and whether or not it was appropriate or not, and like kind of what some of the motion is alleging and what they've testified about. But kind of on the surface, again, high level for all our audience here, if this motion is upheld, and let's say she is disqualified. You already mentioned that they wanted to start this trial in August. What's the delay look like? Like, how do you get another prosecution office to oversee this case? Take our audience kind of through those steps and legal hurdles.
it would be a significant delay if the Fulton DA's office is removed from this case. Things would move to a nonpartisan state agency called the Prosecuting Attorneys Council of Georgia. This group is almost like a trade association for prosecutors around the state. They help them with training. They're how a lot of prosecutors get money from the state house, and they really kind of help all these 50 DA's offices around the state run and continuing education, resources, that sort of thing. And it could take a good long while before another special prosecutor might be appointed. And we know this because this DA's office back in July 2022 was disqualified from investigating one of their main targets. This man, Burt Jones, is now Georgia's lieutenant governor. At the time, he was a state senator who was running for that position. He was under the microscope for his role as a Trump elector. A judge ruled that the DA had a conflict of interest, couldn't investigate him, appointed the prosecuting attorney's counsel to decide what to do next. And it's been more than a year and a half, and the council hasn't announced its next steps, if it plans to say no further investigation is needed, whether it wants to appoint someone else. And so it's possible it could take a very long time if the Fulton DA's office is disqualified. And not only that, there's a real question of what other prosecutor would want to take this case. First of all, it is a monster case that requires a lot of resources. There's something like a dozen DAs working on this case in Fulton, which is bigger than the offices of a lot of prosecuting of DA's offices around the state. Some only have 4 or 5 prosecutors. So a lot of people won't want to take this. A lot of people wouldn't want the political microscope that a case like this would bring. And so there really is, leaves only a handful of offices that would ever consider taking this. And I think given all of this nasty attention that DA Fani Willis has gotten, I think it raises real questions about who might want to take this case. So a lot of the DA's allies believe that if the Fulton DA's office is disqualified, that this case is all but dead. We don't necessarily know that to be true. They could find somebody who wants to take this, but it's also possible the next prosecutor might want to charge it in a different way. Maybe they don't want to look at racketeering laws and do something more narrowly tailored. Or maybe they appoint somebody who decides, I don't think there's a there, let's drop this case.
That's actually very important to note. And didn't know some of that stuff. And again, you know, this is why we have folks like you on. I did want to ask you, because you just said political microscope, and it just got me into this follow-up. So allow me to have a soliloquy here for a second here, Tamar. When you're shooting at the king, you best not miss, is always kind of the proverbial phrase that's thrown around here. And when you're trying to prosecute a former president, we haven't had that in our nation's history. You would think that all of the I's would be dotted and the T's would be crossed. You kind of mentioned a little bit about the Burt Jones stuff and the semi-messiness, let's call it, for lack of a better term, of Fani Willis's office. Let's get into the relationship and what the heart of the motion is. Are you hearing from people there in the state that are like, because she said this in her testimony, the trial is now about me and my relationship and not about, you know, the former president and the RICO charges. Yeah, whose fault is that? That's yours. What are you hearing from people within the prosecution office or people in the state about how messy this looks, that their relationship, even though, again, personal side, nothing illegally performed, you know, it gives the allure and appearance and now fodder for the former president who's out there with his folks saying, look, this is politically motivated. They were sleeping with each other. What are you hearing from people within the state about how messy this kind of looks on the inside?
It very much depends on who you talk to. I think there's a lot of supporters of the DA who say, look, is it advisable that she was seeing her top deputy on this case? No, it's a bad look. But a lot of them believe that there's not enough that rises to the level of disqualification, and they feel like it's very unfair the amount of attention the DA has gotten, and especially just the image at this hearing of this series of white male defense attorneys going after a black woman, the first woman to hold the Fulton DA's job ever, prying into her sex life. A lot of people say that is nasty and uncalled for, and a white man would not be put under the same political microscope, as I called it. But then there are plenty of other people who are just saying, what was she thinking? This smell, you know, this stinks to high heaven. This is wrong and she should be removed. Even if it's not illegal in and of itself. Some people say exactly what you did, Mike, that if you're going to go after the former president, you better have all of your ducks in a row. And this was a massive error in judgment, so much so that the DA should step aside, either for the sake of saving this investigation or to get rid of it and focus on some of the issues that they believe the Fulton DA's office should be focused on, like punishing violent crime and working their way through the COVID backlog of all these thousands of cases that have been sitting here. So it's very much an eye of the beholder kind of thing. And I think this hearing last week, at least as I've talked to folks, I think it really reinforced people's attitudes one way or another. If you loved the DA, you thought that she did a great job defending herself and took a lot of these issues off the table with her testimony. If you don't like her, you were talking about how embarrassing this hearing was and how it's just proof that Judge McAfee should disqualify the DA's office.
It's like you said, eye of the beholder is really well said, because I've been hearing so many different takes, including my own on television, talking about this case. I feel like I know a lot about it, but maybe our audience, like I said, hasn't been following it. So let's stay on the case itself. Let's say the motion is denied, or we already talked about the scenario where it's upheld and now where it goes to. So the motion's denied and now the case is resuming. Can you kind of give us the latest on the case, the people that have already settled with the DA's office, who would actually be charged? Could we actually get this thing up and running before August? I've talked to former Trump lawyers that have said some of these cases, thousands of documents, like you said, the manpower to be able to go through that in discovery would take forever to, you know, try to do something in August. I'm assuming that the same would be held here, but tell us a little bit about this motion is denied now. Where do we go from here, and would we actually start in August?
Well, at this point, the judge has been working his way through what are called pretrial motions, which is how this motion to disqualify the DA came up. And he's been kind of systematically working his way through them, kind of clearing the decks, getting ready ahead of the trial. The DA's office wanted to begin in August, but that was looking unlikely even before this giant wrench was thrown into things, especially just given not only all of these other criminal cases that have been lodged against the former president and all this time in court Trump is going to be spending in places like New York, Florida, Washington. There's questions about presidential immunity in the January 6th case that Jack Smith is doing in Washington. The set of issues in front of the Supreme Court now, or at least that they're waiting for them to review, are quite similar to some of the issues that are going to pop up here locally in Fulton County. So a lot of the lawyers I spoke to believe that the judge is going to want to wait for the Supreme Court to weigh in on the federal case before deciding what he wants to do on the state case. So it was looking less and less likely that August was going to be the start date. And then, of course, you start getting into the political calendar. The proposed start date that prosecutors wanted in August was 3 weeks after the Republican convention, when at this point it's looking that Donald Trump is going to have the Republican nomination and the campaign cycle really gets into high gear. It is looking less and less likely that a case, at least if it started this year, is not going to be resolved by the end of the year. As to where we are, the case back in August, when an indictment was handed up, there were 19 original defendants. We are now down to 15 because of four plea agreements that were struck with four defendants earlier this fall. Among them were Sidney Powell, an attorney briefly affiliated with the Trump campaign, Ken Chesbrough and Jenna Ellis, two other attorneys who were working for the Trump campaign, as well as Scott Hall, who was a bail bondsman here in Atlanta, who was very involved with the effort in Coffee County in South Georgia to copy sensitive election data. They are now cooperating with prosecutors, and it's possible they could be called to testify in this upcoming trial, whenever that may be. So that's where we are. But until this question of disqualification gets resolved, everything is sort of suspended in the air at this point.
You know, Georgia, well, first off, to quote Ray Charles, it's on my mind right now because there's so much going on with all of these cases. And obviously, this has kind of been at the forefront for folks about the Fannie Willis stuff. And then obviously, we've covered here on the show, as you've covered as well, the phone call to then Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger, find me the 11,000 votes. I did want to ask you about one state official that's still in power there, and that's the governor, in Brian Kemp. In all of this, I know he recently testified or at least it came out that he had testified to special counsel Jack Smith and gave some some testimony to him about the election interference. He's been asked about this as well. What are you hearing from the governor's office, or what have we been hearing from Brian Kemp publicly about this case? If we get into like the nitty gritty of this case, who would be called from his office? Would he actually be called to testify in this RICO indictment against the former president?
Yeah, Governor Kemp has had an interesting relationship in all of this because he's expected to be a star witness in this case. And he's had a bit of an uncomfortable situation as part of all of this, where he's definitely not a Donald Trump fan. He's kind of kept him at arm's length, voted for him, but was definitely pressured by him in the aftermath of the 2020 election to take steps that he was not comfortable taking to revisit the election results here in Georgia. He testified before a special grand jury that helped advise DA Willis on this case back in 2022, but he really fought his subpoena to come in and testify. Initially, it appears that there had been some cooperation between his office and prosecutors, but there was a massive communications breakdown. They felt like one of his top aides was being mistreated by Nathan Wade specifically, and a fight that kind of spilled out into public view. That said, he testified. It seemed pretty normal. And in the meantime, especially over the last year, he's been one of the top Republicans who's really pushed back as Republicans before all of this relationship stuff came out. Many Republicans were still targeting the DA for this case. They felt like it was nakedly political, that she should be punished for going after Donald Trump. And he was one of the loudest Republicans who said, you know, I may not love what she's doing, but she hasn't done anything wrong. We need to focus on other things to make Georgia a better place. But especially since these allegations and talks of the relationship have come out, he has seemingly shown more of an appetite for at least some of these entities to investigate the DA and kind of look into this relationship to see if anything improper happened. He's not on the front lines beating the drum saying that the DA should be removed from this case, but it is notable that he at least is willing to have others investigate it for now. But as I said, he's going to be a star witness whenever this trial is going to happen, because he'd gotten called by Donald Trump in the aftermath of the 2020 election and can speak a lot to the president and what he was being asked to do at that time.
It's going to be so interesting to watch. It's kind of like the Super Bowl. We're in the pregame window right now. We're waiting for this game to actually happen. There's so much that you guys are covering. This is why we have folks like you on the program. Tamar Halliman, like I mentioned, fantastic reporter over at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Go check out that podcast, Breakdown. What a good name, Breakdown, right? It's got like a great name. It's got the AJC logo. Go check out all her work over there at AJC.com. Thank you so much, Tamar, for coming on the program. Continued success to you, and please stay safe.
Thank you.
Nick, quick break from the pod, because this episode is presented by our friends over at SeatGeek. Your next best night ever is waiting, my friend, and they've got the tickets. You want to go to an NBA game, an NFL game, a concert, Major League Baseball, whatever it is, all you got to do is go to SeatGeek.com. You're going to enter in the promo code CanWePleaseTalk, and you're going to get $20 off that purchase right now at SeatGeek. Nick, what are you going to do with your $20 off on those tickets, buddy?
I mean, that saves me on anything. I can get food at the game. I can just get the tickets themselves. I mean, baseball's coming along, so I'm excited for that. I can get upper deck tickets and just nothing. And then just all I got to do is worry about food. I mean, anywhere I want to use this, it's well worth it. $20 is a worthwhile investment.
That's right. And I've seen you at sporting events. You eat a lot. Nick needs those $20 off. So go to SeatGeek.com right now. Enter in the promo code CanWePleaseTalk. You're going to get $20 off that purchase. All right, our thank yous there to Tamar Halliman. Like I mentioned, she's a fantastic correspondent. I know I say fantastic all the time. She is fantastic. Atlanta Journal-Constitution, go listen to that podcast, Breakdown. I actually have been listening to their podcast to find out more about everything that's happening in Georgia as this case has unfolded, as defendants have pled guilty. We saw Jenna Ellis plead guilty. I forget who else, his former chief of staff as well, pled guilty, which means he would be cooperating with Fannie Willis's. Well, we'll see if she'll still be the prosecutor. Nick, before we sign off here, just some of your takeaways, not only on the interview with Tamar there, but like this case overall. We have not covered it too much, especially since the motion was filed against Fannie Willis. Like, what do you make of how it's all playing out? And some of what Tamar said there in her reporting, I asked her about what people in the state are saying, like, this looks terrible. Like, your ducks got to all be in a row if you're going to shoot at the king. And here they are, you know, a messy relationship. And now that's at the centerpiece of this trial, as opposed to the actual RICO charges and the 19 co-defendants.
Yeah, I mean, this is what happens with Trump. I mean, Trump can be as messy as he wants to be, but, you know, to bring any case, you have to essentially be essentially as clean as a whistle, I guess. You know, it's funny because this all began with, you know, someone on the lower rung of this case, you know, I think it was Mike Roman, who, you know, had a defense attorney who was able to find out, you know, that there's an improper relationship going on in the DA's office. What's troubling, though, is that, as, you know, as Tamar talks about, it's really hard to see how, actually, from a legal standpoint, that their affair, you know, the DA and Nathan Wade, has any bearings on the actual case itself. You know, the fact that they had an affair has nothing to do with the president coming forward on a, you know, taped saying, "I need 11,000 votes." The problem, though, is that, you know, there is that argument of, well, did she apply pressure on, you know, Nathan Wade to bring forward a case because of their affair? Like, there's this, we're talking about, is there any room for reason of, you know, for any shadow of doubt now in that what could play in the minds of jurors? I'm fascinated because in the city of Atlanta, you know, with the kind of jury they may have, which very likely would not be sympathetic to the president, I think it still bodes out in their favor. But this, at the very least, we're 6 weeks into this now, right? That since this revelation has come up, these cause these kinds of delays. You know, we walked into 2024 talking about how much time the former president's going to be spending time in a courtroom. And other than the decision that just came out in New York, does this cause a delay that may possibly play this out after the election? Anything that works in the favor of the former president is what they're going to try to use to capitalize the constant delays to have all these legal issues put forward after the November general election, which then, if he happens to win the presidency, these things will magically disappear.
Yep. Well said and well summarized too. And again, you could tell you and I have had one of his former attorneys on, right? And so who knows what's going to happen with this? Who knows if this motion is going to get upheld? I think Tamar mentioned, if she didn't mention in the interview, I'll mention it here, that the judge hasn't ruled on this as of this taping. So we'll be following it along with her. Follow all her fantastic work over at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution for the fantastic work of this show. Video, you want to check out the video interview with Tamar, head over to our YouTube channel, type in "Can We Please Talk Podcast?" We should pop right up. Audio podcast platforms, you know by now, Apple, Spotify, Google. Shout out to everybody listening to us over on Good Pods. Shout out to Acast, our hosting platform. We can't do it without them. Can't do it without each and every one of you that listens to this program. As always, I am Mike Leon.
And I'm Nick Saveri.
We'll see everybody next time.